Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 652. It's the 1st of December, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy, that's T-L-O-U, answering private investor questions. And at one point he says, recently the share price has fallen, but the story's getting better. So it's an interesting story there. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Barclays, Tertiary Minerals, and AB Dynamics. Plus, I also have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering BP, Royal Dutch Shell, Amec Wheeler Forster, Glencore, and Sky. Plus, today's suggested one for your watch list is Pires Investments. Ticker there is P-I-R-E, submitted by Alexius. Thanks for that, Alexius. And I'll get to that in a bit, the three reasons why and the fundamentals behind that decision. Don't forget, anything you hear on the podcast is not intended as investment advice, all right? This is just information to do your own research on. Please, do not buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation here. I also have a top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, and the most liked RNS. There's only one company, really, that stood out, and I'm going to highlight that because it had more likes by far than any other company. I'll cover that in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy. That's T-L-O-U ticker. Colm, thank you for coming back on.
Good day, Justin. Good to be back on again.
Now, we've had an update today, a nice update, I thought, and even though at the moment, the AIM market doesn't welcome anything, unless you've found $1 billion somewhere. I think the share price doesn't go up on anything, so it's hard, but we'll go through that. But we've got some investor questions here, Colm. Before we get to that, though, for people not aware of Tlou, could you give us like a minute summary of what the business is all about, please?
Yes, indeed. Tlou, we are an AIM and ASX listed company. We're focused on delivering power in Botswana through the development of coal bed methane projects. Botswana has a severe energy shortage. It's currently relying on expensive imported diesel to generate power. We have a gas project in the region. We're the 100% owners of that project. We call it the Lesedi project. And look at this, the plan is to extract gas from the coal bed, use that gas to generate power to meet the needs of Botswana and further down the line, the Southern African region as a whole. We were established in 2009. The company is significantly de-risked in pursuit of its goal to become a significant gas-to-power producer in the region. We have the most advanced CBM project in Botswana. We've got 10 prospecting licenses, which cover an area of about 8,300 square kilometers. The Lesedi project already has booked independently certified gas resources, and very recently we booked the first independent CBM gas reserves in Botswana. The first gas-to-power solution is expected to be delivered through a scalable project with the Botswana government, for which we received approval earlier this year. It's a 50 megawatt project, which we will do in increments of probably 10 megawatts at a time. And following implementation of that project, we do plan larger projects down the line in Botswana and in the region as a whole.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've got to say, I do hold the stock, and the reason why I hold the stock is I like the story there, and like you said, you are the most advanced, CBM project in Botswana, in a country, with a chronic energy shortage. What's very interesting about your update today, I quite like this, is that you now almost, proving your concept there, you'll be using the gas to power the pumps that basically pump the gas out of the wells. So that's an excellent proof of concept. And I didn't strike me at the time that Botswana is so in need, of energy, that obviously you are using diesel yourself. Yeah,
well, that's it. Like that's something we're quite excited about at the moment, is that, and look, we're looking to do it sort of the end of this year and early next year. We should get it in place. The conversion of our field generation from diesel to gas. As you can imagine, we're currently using diesel generators in the field to provide the power of the equipment to run the pumps in our wells for, the communications and any power in the, not only at the wells, but in our field as well. And at the same time, we're flaring gas from those wells. Now, we're planning to harness that gas, use it in the put that gas into gas-fired generators instead of using the diesel we have been using. And in effect, that is a proof of concept, and it shows how CBM gas can be used to replace diesel, albeit on a small scale in our field. But it's a significant cost saving. Diesel's not cheap, and we've a much more reduced diesel requirement. It's a cleaner fuel, and it's something we want to get in place early next year.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's like saying, can this be done? Yes, we're doing it. So, for ourselves. It's an ideal proof of concept. I like that a lot. Okay, let's go into some questions I've got there from private investors. So, first one is, why are the contracts with GE only 3 months long? Can you explain the contracts briefly and then explain why they're only 3 months long, please, Colin?
Yeah, we signed a cooperation agreement back with GE and IKH about 3 months ago now, and that has just been renewed this week for a further 3 months. Look, we generally like to have relatively short contracts with all third parties, specifically before any binding arrangements are put in place. We've had issues before where longer term contracts can lead to problems, particularly in situations if one party isn't performing, difficult to get out of that and then get in contract with somebody else. The shorter term contracts also focus people on targets and help prevent things from dragging on, getting delayed. You can imagine a large entity like GE have various projects on the go, and you don't want to end up sort of being the bottom of the pile and say, look, we'll get to you later. And in the meantime, a company like us, we're chugging along and you're spending money, and then money gets tight again and suddenly nothing's been done. So that's part of the reason, really, is to focus minds and make sure that tasks are being met in a timely manner.
Yeah, okay. And the next question is, why did the work with GE overrun?
I wouldn't say it's actually overrun. Maybe someone sees it as we signed a 3 month contract. Should it not all be in place now? Their work hasn't actually overrun. The project's going to run for quite some time, so the scope of work is likely to evolve over time. For the last 3 months or so, they've been extremely engaged with us, specifically in relation to the choice of generation equipment suitable for the first phase of the 50 megawatt project, as well as providing indicative costs in relation to CapEx, OpEx, the type of power generation asset to use. Look, this is all very useful data that we will include in our economic model, and already have included in our economic model. And as we go on, GE will continue to be involved with the project.
Yeah, I didn't understand the question. I wasn't aware it was overrunning. So you're saying it hasn't really overrun. Okay.
I expect somebody, would see possibly having to renew the 3 month agreement. Sort of might indicate that, but that's not really the case.
Okay, no, it's just, exactly. That's what I thought. Okay. Next question. The share price seems to be falling recently. Do you have any ideas why? There's been rumors of a placing. Is this rumor true? So first and foremost, you released what I thought was a very positive update today. And I think we are, we're at a place at the moment, seasonality is playing a bit of effect here. And so I'm seeing a lot of AIM stocks, almost tanking on no news. And I'm thinking, what's going on? The story hasn't changed. It's all that's changed is sentiment. I mean, in market generally, I think. So obviously, can't really comment on the share price too much. But have you any ideas why? And there's been rumors of a placing. Is this true?
The rumors of the placing, look, we've had a raising very recently, so I've no idea where the rumors of a placing have come from. Mm-hmm. Look, possibly somebody putting misleading information on social media and people putting two and two together and getting five. But look, we're fully funded for our current planned work program. Obviously, we will need funding when it comes to the development of the 50 megawatt project at the moment, however, and that's currently expected to be raised at a project level, not at the headstock level, not at the Talao level. So what would happen in that effect is that Talao, the headstock, we would ring fence part of our gas, put that into the 50 megawatt project. That would earn Talao its equity interest in that project. Mm-hmm. We would then talk to our project partners, let's say GE, for instance, or somebody else, let's say GE, and GE would then, they would come in with their capital and expertise, and that would earn them their interest in the in that project. That capital then would be used to develop the project, drill the wells, and get the equipment and so on. And the in the meantime, the Talao headstock that can go on. We continue to develop our gas reserve base and use newly enhanced reserves into other projects and so on. So that's where the funding for a 50 megawatt project would come. It would be at project level rather than at the Talao headstock level. So look, that's all subject to negotiation and agreement, of course, but all else will be equal, that's the current plan.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially, the rumor is not true. Is not true, and obviously, you have no idea why the share price is falling.
Well, the falling share price. It's difficult to understand, really. From our point of view, in my opinion, the story just gets better and better, and the share price seems to go the other way. So it's extremely difficult to understand. One of our shareholders, one of our larger shareholders, who's been with us since 2009, he said to me. He said to me previously, he said, just you can't control the market. The market will do what the market wants to do.
Yeah.
So just focus on focus what you can control. So I think there's definitely an element of truth in that. I think as well, there's been many shareholders that were waiting for our initial reserve booking to come out. And when it did come out, some of them would have sold off following that announcement. So that would have probably triggered some of the sales since our reserves booking. Also, many holders like to get in and get out of stock relatively quickly, particularly sort of retail shareholders. And a longer term play like CBM, Cold Bed Methane, it may not suit people's portfolio, their risk profile, and that could be prompting them to sell as well. But look, it's a difficult one to say, but for those who are happy to stay in the stock, I think there's an awful lot of factors at play that make us a very interesting prospect going forward. Look, the pure and simple one, I think, is we've got a very large gas asset in a region of the world with an enormous power deficiency. We're the only ones in Botswana to have gas reserves in place. So that means not only do we have a large asset, we can actually get that asset out of the ground at commercial rates, because reserves by definition are commercial.
Yeah.
The market for power in the region is vast, not only in Botswana, but the whole of Southern Africa and South Africa in particular. I think most people are aware of the chronic shortage of power in that whole region. Much of the supporting infrastructure is already there, meaning that it's not a stranded asset. It'd be different if you say, yes, you may have lots and lots of gas in the middle of the desert in Botswana, but you can never get it out. That's different. The reality is we're very close to the power grid. It's ideal pipeline country if you wanted to run a pipeline to an off-taker. So it's not a stranded asset. We will be looking at replacing diesel generation initially, and diesel generation is not only extremely expensive for those generating power using diesel, but it's not a clean source of energy like CBM. So, we've all the environmental advantages as well.
Yeah,
Speaking of environment, we have our environmental impact statement approved. That means we're well ahead of others. It took us, from start to end, well over 2 years to get that in place. That allows us to develop our field, and it also allows us to do further exploration. So another entity coming in who might want to do exploration in the region, they will need to have their EIS in place before they can even start, which may take them another 2 years before they could even put a drill into the ground.
Yeah.
So not only that, the government are supportive of CBM. They recently came out and added CBM generation to the mix going forward for their power requirements, and they've approved the 50 megawatt project. So look, all the ingredients are there for anyone interested in or happy to keep in the stock longer term. But I think the oil and gas industry has taken a hit in recent times, so possibly market sentiment hasn't helped our price. Look, even this morning, it'd be interesting to see how the OPEC deal that came out yesterday or last night has an effect on the market. But look, we'll just continue to progress the project, do what we can do, get the name out there, and all else being equal, the share price should react.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is one of those things. Like you said, you can't control what the market does. And sometimes you start getting the sell-off and it's a snowball effect. And it has to find its own level where people start realizing, hang on, when the doubters were in there, when people were selling, the doubters, or the sentiment start to change. They go, hang on, this is quite cheap here. It's a good project. Yeah. And the sentiment starts to change. You just have to let it settle, you know. You can't fight the price, essentially. You can't fight the market. It's pointless. All right, let's move on to the next one. So next one is... What is the next bit of news we can expect?
Next bit of news, yeah, we're working on a few items at the moment, primarily in relation to getting the first phase of the project up and running, this first 10 megawatts of the 50. So at the moment, we're finalizing the field development plan. So this includes the drilling schedule, location of the wells, the design of the field, gas gathering, all for that first 10 megawatts. It's well on track, and I expect that plan should be in place, or at least the initial plan should be in place by the end of this quarter. That's been going on over the last month or so. And we're also doing an assessment of transmission lines, the various options to integrate with the power grid in Botswana. The key here is to try and ensure that when we put in our transmission lines, that we have adequate capacity, that we're able to increase our generation relatively easily without having to, say, run another transmission line. So look, we're working with an engineering firm in Botswana on this project, and we spoke to Botswana Power Corp, who actually own the power generation infrastructure, effectively own the grid in Botswana. They're one leg of the government. We spoke to them in relation to where the ideal spots to connect to the grid are, and so on. And they recommended us to use a number of engineering firms that they liaise with. Now, we got tenders from them, and we've chosen one. But look, it's quite an involved process. Various factors need to be taken into account. This includes the route for the transmission lines, land access requirements, environmental concerns. There's some heritage areas in the region, those sort of things. So look, we expect that project possibly to take about 3 months. That's what we were indicated. So sometime in quarter one 2017, that would happen. What else is going on? The offtake negotiations with government. For the initial 10 megawatts up to 50 megawatt project, this is an ongoing process, and look, it's something we'd like to finalize as soon as we can. We're really, you know, we'll push it as much as we can. However, there's a considerable amount of dialogue that happens within government departments in relation to this. So we don't have any control over that. They also have to liaise with different boards in Botswana. So the exact timing of when we will be able to, you know, finalise that agreement and, you know, sign off the deal for the length the agreement will be, the price we're going to get for the power and so on, it's difficult for me to give an exact gauge on when that would be. But look, it's ongoing, and look, I'd love to say we'll have it really, really early in 2017, and look, potentially we will. So, yeah, hopefully that happens pretty soon. But that's an ongoing process as well, led in the main by Habake Habake, our executive director based in Botswana, our former permanent secretary with the Department of Mines and Government. So he's very involved in that process. And obviously we have the conversion of the field from diesel to gas ongoing as well.
Yeah.
And like that'd be, I think that'll be a really like, well, it may be relatively minor in the general scheme of things when it comes to generation, but I think it'll be a really good story, and you know, it'd be good. We'll try and particularly promote it in Botswana itself, where, you know, just to feed it to the local people there, saying, look, lads, this alternative to your rolling blackouts and power deficiency, that there is an alternative in the country, and you know, get support in country as well for the project.
Excellent. Well, listen, I'm just going to ask one more question, Colin, from me essentially, and all I want is a one-word answer, right? So, the story is, which is a good one, hasn't changed at all. There's no reason for the share price fall of late, apart from sort of sentiment and rumour. But so essentially, is the story the same? And is that the case? And it's a good one. Is that the case?
One word answer is yes. The longer answer is, I think the story is actually getting better. You know, and we are progressing the project more and more. Our RNS today outlined the current workflow. It's a busy time. Getting the first 10 megawatts up and running will be the hardest part. A bit like getting the first reserves booked. The first one is the hardest part. Once you've the first 10 megawatts up, theoretically, the rest should be easier. The groundwork has already been done. It takes time to get a project up and running, particularly in an area like this where it hasn't been done before. But look, we're making good progress, very eager to get to our goal of bringing clean energy to Botswana and making a significant return for our shareholders.
Yeah, exactly. All right, marvellous. Well, last thing, quickly, in three reasons, why should someone hit the follow button on the Vox Markets page that you have there and therefore get RNSs straight to the front screen of their phone whenever you release them? 3 points.
Well, please. We have a huge gas asset in a region of the world with a huge power deficiency. We have the only CBM reserves in Botswana, and we're well ahead of any other competitors in the field.
Marvellous, Colm, as ever. I love it to chat to you. And like you say, it's going to be a busy period over the next two quarters, couple of months. So hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. 'Tis the season to be jolly, la la la, Alan Green. You're Al.
I'm great, Just. Merry Christmas to you and season's felicitations and everything else that goes with it at this time of year.
Yeah, it's the first
Pudding
day of December.
Crackers, blowing party poopers and all the rest of it. Yeah, there we go.
you can blow what you want, Al. Keep it private though, okay? Listen, I was just going to say, the first day of December,
yes.
And the market hasn't, let's hope, you know, we haven't started as we mean to go on. Because it's not a good start to the day, is it? The FTSE is down, and it seems to be a bit of bearish sentiment about, doesn't it? Apart from oil stocks, because of the OPEC deal,
yep.
It doesn't feel too bullish at the moment.
Well, I think we normally look to the retail sector to provide us with that fillip for Christmas, don't we? We expect to walk into the big superstores and see all the decorations and see queues at the tills and everyone sort of spending loads of money, and so the retailers that have been struggling actually turn it around. But there are so many changes taking place. We're seeing what is effectively the deglobalization of Marks and Spencers and Tesco's and the likes. They're all basically battening down the hatches, bringing everything in house, and of course the elephant in the room for the retail sector per se is Amazon. Amazon's moving in, and as we know, this is the time of year that Amazon, everyone sort of books, gets their Christmas presents for Amazon. You buy it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a bang on your door, 8 o'clock the following morning, it's there, and it's just a fantastic logistics system. You then apply that to food, and the economies of scale that Amazon have, I think a lot of retailers are running very scared as to how they're going to adjust their business model to deal with that. And I think that in itself could very much be a dampener on the seasonal the season of goodwill this year.
Well, what you should do is do what Morrisons have done and just jump in bed with them, because that's what they've done, isn't it?
Well, that's right, yeah. And, of course, that's basically killed Ocado. Ocado still had to deal with Waitrose, but it was always the growth at Ocado was always based on the premise that they would expand and do deals with Morrisons and the other supermarkets. But, of course, the only hope for Ocado now probably is that Amazon come and say, well, yeah, you've got a network, we'll come in and take you out. But, frankly, the one they've got is so good anyway, why should they?
Yeah. I mean, how did Barclays react yesterday, the stress test? I didn't see that, because they had a couple of issues, didn't they? But they're sorting it out, apparently. Did you see that? Are you still holding Barclays?
I do indeed, yeah. And I note in the FT this morning that there's the Financial Times ran a headline today, Barclays, there's life in the old dog yet. On the fact that they did okay in the stress test, that there's still room for improvement, but they don't currently need to raise any more money to bolster their bolster their capital adequacy requirements. The mood at the bank is that after all the years of litigation from PPI claims and LIBOR and dark pools with the US SEC, they might finally be coming to the end of the tunnel and actually have a model that they can start to grow. And of course, we've seen a big jump in Barclays value over the past few months. You know, it was trading between went as low as 140, 135, I think, and then it came back to 160, 170. Yeah, and it's broken back over £2 again, and here we are, 2.14, 2.15, which was the previous level. So we could very well see, I think I mentioned last time, the net asset value of Barclays is well over £3. So it's highly likely that if there is a general perception that Barclays is really starting to turn the corner, that we could at least return to net asset value, which from where we stand now does leave an awful lot of upside on the table.
Yeah. Okay. What other stocks are you looking at the moment, Al?
Okay, a couple of other points. We mentioned a few occasions tertiary minerals, the Fluorspar mining company, mining and exploration company. Now, Fluorspar, just to remind listeners, it's a material that's used in smelting, in aluminium production, in glass production. It's also one of the critical chemicals as defined by the EU, that if supplies ran short, there would be serious repercussions for industry. Now, Fluorspar's had a pretty flat year. There's not a great deal that's been happening. But there was an article that was flagged up on the Industrial Minerals website last week saying that Fluorspar prices in Europe have remained unchanged despite increased supplies. But there is a recovery in the steel sector, and that recovery in the steel sector is fully expected to support Fluorspar prices. So tertiary minerals share price is just over a penny, it has been trading there for a while. But if you wanted to gain exposure to the sector in a recovering market, now might be a good time to get in, because the share price, I think, has been as high as it's been well over 2p over the past year. Clearly, there's everything to play for. Several projects the company's working on. It's got a project in Sweden and in Nevada to produce and mine fluorspar. And the JORC resources in those mines is pretty substantial, and on production would support a far higher valuation than the company currently offers.
Yeah, and just on a technical level, I mean, last time it hit a penny, it did bounce, you know, quite nicely. That was back in, when was that? Back in the 2nd of February? No, 29th of February, right about there. Yeah. So it bounced up. It went from a penny, shot up to 2.4.
Yeah.
More, you know, nearly 150% there. So there we are. So we'll see what happens here. But it's a lot more orderly chart. You can see there forming a bit of a support level at 1.1, 1.2.
There really is, isn't there? Yeah. And it's bounced off that several times. So in technical terms, it's successfully tested that level. So you would expect any developments, any push forward in the sector would see a re-rating to the upside, and probably supporting maybe that higher level. But even so, you know, it's I like to look for opportunities where maybe an industry has been dormant or quiet for a while, and then there are signs of recovery, and you can look at all the stocks a well placed within the industry as a vehicle to benefit from the upside as the sector improves.
Yeah. Well, having said that, please do your own research on that. It's TYM, tertiary minerals. Anything else you look at, Al?
Yes, a company called AB Dynamics. The epic code is ABDP.L. Now, this is an interesting little company, and it was it came to my attention. Dr. David Paul at Vectorvest flagged this company up some time ago, and what's interesting is that the company Vectorvest as we know, combines a series of technical and fundamental indicators, and basically when those two meet up give the metrics indicate a positive outcome, then it's something you should look at. And the company has been flagged up on the front page of VectorVest for the past little while, but the chart's pretty interesting too, as are the fundamental developments. Just to look at what it does, the company supplies automotive testing, suspension, braking systems to the to the motor industry. It has various subsidiary operations that provide driverless robots, crash vehicles, a system called kinematics to measure the impact a vehicle goes through when it crashes, and so on and so on. The company is opening a new factory. It took on a new CEO, a guy called Tim Rogers, in October, and its full year results were very positive. The revenues grew by 24% to 20 million, profits were up 16%. The company's got a market cap of 89 million, and it has a dividend yield of 0.6%. So there's a little dividend on the way. But the VectorVest indicators point to a valuation somewhere around £7, you know, which compared to where we are currently at just over £5, it is pretty encouraging. This is a company that's caught my attention. It's got support from the brokers as well. Cantor recently upgraded their rating to hold with a £5.10 price target. Panmure Gordon rated as buy with a £5.25 price target. So there's a bit of upside there either way. But it's just an interesting stock because it's got a niche market all of its own, pays a dividend, and clearly it's with a valuation of 89 million. I think we could expect to see some further upside there.
Yeah, it is an interesting chart, very bullish, a bit of momentum there. But if you notice, it's got a rising wedge there, which it's higher lows at the bottom, forming a sort of a diagonal line upwards.
Yep.
And then it's hitting its head on that £5.10 level. And you think if it clears that, it'll move up again nicely, you know. So and it looks to be bunching up there. So, it's just come off a little bit. The RSI is rebuilding. So it'd be interesting to see if it breaks out. It could go higher by the looks of it on the chart anyway.
It could power considerably higher, I think. I think it's an exciting little stock. There's clearly it's from a fundamental standpoint, it ticks all the boxes. Everything's in place to make further progress. This year they've taken on a new CEO to further accelerate their growth, but it ticks all of the boxes, both on a fundamental level and a technical level right now. So an exciting stock to get on board.
Marvellous. It's got boxes and it's ticking them.
So
what's ABDP sticker? As with any stock on the podcast, please do your own research before making any investment decisions. This is not investment advice. This is information for you to use as you see fit.
Indeed. Shares can go down as well as up.
Yeah, they often do. I'll tell you that now. I've experienced that. Cheers, Al. Speak next week.
Thanks, Just. Cheers, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. Chris, good morning. How are you, fella? You all right?
Hi there, Justin. Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Not too bad.
Yeah, well, obviously the big news out, the one I covered this morning in my five things you need to know, is the OPEC deal. What's your take on that, Chris?
Well, you know, it's interesting because nobody believed they'd actually do it. And we all know that cartels are inherently unstable. There's an incentive to cheat and all of that stuff. We may well find in the fullness of time that there is a bit of cheating going on. But the reality is they've done something which is highly supportive to the oil price. And you've seen the impact. You know, you look at some of the biggest stocks in the UK market, stuff like Royal Dutch Shell, back up to that near £22 resistance level. On the back of this deal, because clearly higher oil prices, it eventually finds their way to the sort of the BPs and Shells of this world. So good news for them. I think for the world, it kind of implies that there's a bit more inflationary pressure. It'll put a bit of pressure on bond yields. It just tells you need to be in equities as a big picture asset class. Another indication of that. We knew that already. For the market, though, within the stock market, look, your BPs and your Shells are absolutely fine. Pension fund positions, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's probably a bit more excitement in other areas of the what I would call large and mid-cap universe, which tends to be where I look. And you look at something like, a real bashed-up stock like Amick Foster Wheeler, a company which has gone through all sorts of gubbins and problems over the last year. I'm just taking a quick look at the share price now, and it's kind of ranged between, circa 350 and 600 pence or so over the last year. And, it's got a lot of oil services exposure. And actually, if you take the view that oil prices are going to remain firmly supported, and I would take that view from a supply-demand perspective, oil services is the place to take a look, because actually your leverage there in the larger mid-cap space is much bigger. Things like Shell and BP, they're what is known as integrated producers. Sure, they'll make a bit more money, but it's not very, very good news. It's not uniformly good news. These oil services companies, Amec, Hunting, etc., they've been bashed up, they've been hurt, there's been lots of issues. Actually, they're in a better position prospectively if you're a large mid-cap investor. That's where you should be having a look around.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Interestingly enough, I've had talked to quite a few CEOs of oil companies on the show there, and a lot of them are starting to do work now. And one of the reasons why they are doing work and starting to do some drilling is because the oil services sector said now they're doing work for half the price. Sort of hiring these services companies for half the price that they could do it back 4 years ago. And so it seems like a lot of companies are realizing that they have to do something. Exploration is not enough now. They have to start drilling. We're talking about a company, just run about 100 million market cap, this is. And so, these companies probably now, all companies, thinking, this is a cheap deal. There's bargains to be had in the oil services sector, employing these companies. So, it's a good area. And looking at Royal Dutch Shell and all that, I mean, do you know what? Like you said, it's at the top of resistance there now of the trading range. And so I would sit back and wait for a while, because we are, in the aftermath of that meeting straight away, and of course we're gonna have a bit of bullishness off the back of that. But again, as you say, then if you look at the track record of OPEC and all these agreements, they don't stick to it, do they? So
it was the first thing I learned when I did economics at university. First thing I learned was cartels, there's an incentive to cheat, because if you think about it, if you produce an extra million barrels, then you get sort of potentially a bit more revenue and others don't. So there is an incentive to cheat always. So these things inherently are unstable over time. But what they've done, I think, and bringing it back to fundamentals, the trouble is, at the moment, we are underinvesting in the oil and gas space. Maybe that's the reality of the shift towards renewables and all of that. But somehow, when I look at emerging market demand, I don't think so. Yeah. We're underinvesting at the moment. This means that I think the oil price ultimately does go up. I'm thinking $60+ in 2017, and that's going to be okay for the oil services sector. Your BPs and your Shells are rumble on, I would agree. Pick them up for dividends, but not capital appreciation today. But if you want a bit of oomph in the large mid-cap space, and also we know that the small-cap space is going to be full of people getting even more excited because the oil price is going up. But in the large mid-cap space, take a look at some of the services names. Amick Foster Wheeler would be one that I would particularly look at.
Yeah, I'm with you on the fundamental long-term story of oil. Like I said, they've taken out $1 trillion, apparently, of exploration. They've pulled that out of the space. And we won't see an immediate reaction to that. But, over the long term, that's going to have an effect on the price of oil. It's got to. Like you say, there are renewables coming on, but nowhere near, at the pace which it will replace the need for oil. So, I think we will see that supply problem for, 2, 3, 4 years and the like. It takes a long time to switch a big oil field on. These super majors are now not investing in these, overly expensive areas. So it will have an effect, several years down the line, I think. So I think in a good oil stock, you should always have exposure to good oil stocks. Anything else you're looking at there?
Yeah, I mean, quick one, staying in the commodity space. Look, Glencoe's been a phenomenal share year to date. It's basically just been a straight line up. I mean, a year ago, you were kicking around, 75 odd pence, and here we are at 283 pence today, for a massive FTSE 100 company. Mm. Now, we all know the story here. We know the fact that the company was, famously one analyst said it was worth 0 pence. And obviously, that was a mega buy signal. But what I want to highlight here is that they've executed a disposal plan perfectly. They've announced today that their disposal plan, sort of stage one, if you like, has been completed fully to their satisfaction. And you can see the way the market's taken that sort of ongoing news over the last year. All I'd say is, you know, it's another indication that the stock market is deeply psychological. As I say, a year ago, everyone was dumping Glencore. They were convinced the company was going to go bust. But the reality is, when you've got ultimately good assets, and Glencore did have good assets and does still have some good assets, you have options and optionality. Kind of what's interesting with them, of course, is they've got a big marketing business as well. And what I take from today's numbers, they've got a conference call later on today, is that the marketing earnings are at the top of expectations. Marketing is sort of the buying and selling of mining output and related. That gives them a bit of integration. It's an all right company, Glencore. I'm not sure. I've still got to work out whether you chase the shares here. But the big message is, when you see big fear, sometimes you can find big opportunity.
Yeah, and also one other thing, if you look at the chart, that I remember it was like they went down something ridiculous for a big company, like 25% in one day at one point. And I look at the chart, that was back in 2015, 28th of the 9th, and it went down to 67 pence. And there's no such thing as a V-shaped recovery. If you're a fast trader, maybe you get in there and... hang on, there's the boss of Glencore calling me there. So if you're a fast trader, you get in there maybe and try and catch a falling knife, which is quite dangerous. But then, like I said, the V-shape, next few days, it rebounded back up to £1.25. Then if you look at it, it slowly and gradually grinded back down, retested that level a little bit higher. It didn't actually go down to 67, but what about 70 pence there? And then that's when the grind up started to happen. So it's almost when you see a spike down like that, wait, sit back and let it retest that area, because it nearly always happens, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was all because, as I said, the reason why it dumped to that point was because you had an analyst coming out saying the equity is worth zero, which is, you know, it's a very, very rare thing to see a FTSE 100 company and that attributed to it. It's either going to be a fraud or there's a bit of what, it's not fraudulent analysis, it's bad analysis, and that's what it was. So there you go, take your cues off that. Market is psychological, use that psychology and sentiment issues as your friend and not your phone.
Yeah. So I'm quite annoyed at. Every morning I get an email from CityWire, and they cover stocks, I think it's dawn breaking email or something, and I hold Sky, and every time they highlight Sky, they got this one analyst called Ian Whittaker from Liberum, who's the most bullish person on bearish person on Sky around, and I've seen other, you know, mostly other analysts seem to be quite bullish at this level. He's the only one that's bearish, and they always highlight him. I thought, why do they highlight him? Is it just because he's different from the rest? You know, and I think it just gets on my nerves. It's not a balanced side there. It's always just his little paragraph there saying £6.30 for these shares. And I thought, what?
Well, there's always two sides to a story. You know, my view, I too am an owner, and I would perceive that 7.75 pence as they are today, it's exhibiting very good value, and certainly I would say a fairer price is £9-10, something like that at the very least. So, you know, I see the shares firming up here. I like the sound of their recent offer on in the mobile space. I think we've got a sticky product inherently. Churn is falling as per the last set of numbers, and they're deleveraging as they get the opportunities from integrating the German and the Italian business into the UK one. Put it all together, I'd be an owner of this one, and I am an owner. So there's always two sides to the story, absolutely. And when you see very, not necessarily biased coverage, but when you see coverage that always tends to kind of flick one way rather than the other, always think about the other side, because there's always these two parts of the story. But here, I think the risk reward's good. I'd be a buyer. You get a 5% and change yield as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that Sky Mobile offering seems quite good to me. I mean, seems quite flexible. They're doing a flexible monthly plan. You can change it on a monthly basis. And there's also one thing I was quite impressed by, is that data you don't use can be rolled over up to 3 years. And I thought, that's quite generous. And
I tell you, that's not going to happen, is it? In the sense that I don't know anybody who doesn't use up anywhere close to their data requirements. Certainly, I'm banging up against any limits by the end of the month. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous. Chris, thanks for that. Speak next week, fella.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
All right. Today's suggested one for your watch list is Pires Investments, ticker PIRI. It's Piri, submitted by Alexius. Thank you, Alexius, for getting involved here. What does the company do? It's a Shell. An investment company, Shell. How many shares does the company have in issue? It's 33.9 million. What's the current price and market capitalization? It is share price at the moment at 2.875 pence. Market cap just a smidgey below 1 million. What revenue and profit and loss does the company have? No revenues. But as stated in the interims for the 6 months ended 30th of June, they made a loss before taxation of £153,000. How much cash on debt does the company have? So as stated in the interims for 6 months ended the 30th of April 2016, their current assets were investments £483,000, trade and other receivables £35,000, cash and equivalents £52,000. But on the 28th of November, they raised £150,000 at 3p. And on the 2nd of November, they also raised £525,000 at 3p. So list three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, huge potential with upcoming investments in to be listed venture. All right. Number two, tight float, share float. PRS, which is Patnos Resources, have a 24% stake, roundabouts, that in the company. And three, £775,000 raised at 3p. And current SP is just below that. So, yeah, so the raising there, of course, that's right. Sorry, I was just trying to do the math there while I was talking. I'm incapable of doing that, but that's right. Share price placing was 3p. It's now 2.875. So check that out. Please do your own research. That's Piri's Investments, ticker Piri. P-I-R-I. Thank you very much, Alexis, for getting involved. And by all means, if you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, then please submit it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and you'll see one of my posts there. Just click in there, scroll down, and you'll see a question there saying, do you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists? Then click here, fill in the form, and I could be featured on a future podcast. All right. Here are the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Bakliyeh Energia, that's BKY. At four, Keras Resources, KRS. At three, Kennedy Ventures, that's KENV. At two, Solo Oil and Gas, that's Solo ticker. Number one most followed company on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours is Sepura. S-E-P-U. It's been there a while. Quite a few times, actually. I mean, I lie. It hasn't been at number one for a while. It's featured in this top five quite a lot over the last few weeks. All right. And the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website this morning was a project update by Talao Energy. Yeah, lots of likes there, and the others didn't pretty much feature compared to that, so I've just kept that there, and it had several likes. So obviously I chatted to Colm on the podcast earlier, and worth checking out, I think. Talao have a very interesting project there. I've written a blog which you can see. I do hold stock in the company, so you may think of my my decisions or my opinion is biased, so please do your own research. And this is not this is not advice to invest, just advice to do some research in that company. It's very interesting from the management down, what they're doing in Botswana, etc., etc. Thank you very much for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.